Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable! Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Number 33, Mike. Actually, we got two mics today, but we're getting there. We're getting there. Episode 33 of the Last Round Podcast. I'm Danny Z alongside Michael Shepard, my co-host. We're back again after a huge, would you call it an upset? I wouldn't call it an upset. I wouldn't call it an upset from this past weekend on Saturday.
We both thought Hurd, so maybe an upset. One of the fights of the year.
I mean, Hurd was the favorite. Hurd was the favorite, but you know we'll jump into that. But that was arguably the fight of the year so far. It could be the fight of the year as the year ends. You know, coming towards the ending months here in 2019. But before we move on to preview some fights from this next week and review some fights, we have a special guest actually on the line once again, which is actually perfect. Very relatable in terms of this past Saturday's fight between Julian J. Rock Williams and Jared Swift Hurd. We got Cutman Mike Rodriguez, who's actually the cutman for J. Rock. And he's also a LAPD homicide detective out here in Los Angeles. And you just got back from this past Saturday's fight, Mike. So, once again, thank you for coming on the Last Round tonight.
You guys are very welcome. I'm glad to be here. You got half of that right. I actually work for the sheriff's
department. Oh, Mike. See, you know what?
I know.
You know what? My co-host Mike over here told me it was LAPD, and I was like, are you sure? And he was like, yeah. So I'd see, that's not my fault. I'm blaming it on him.
That's why I co-host
that's like
Mike.
Telling somebody they went to USC when they went to UCLA.
Oh, man. See, thanks a lot, Mike. See, thanks a lot. I knew it too. I was like, "Are you sure it's the LAPD or is it the sheriff's?" That he was like, "Oh, I think it's LAPD." I was like, "All right, because I hope I'm not wrong." It looks like we messed up already.
That's why you're number one, Danny. That's why.
But once again, Mike, we appreciate your time. We know you just got back. I don't know if you landed today or maybe landed yesterday, but we appreciate you calling in, giving us your time, and just going straight into that because it's such big news, especially for your fighter. How was that, especially following that announcement that J-Rock is now the unified champion at 154 pounds?
Let me tell you something. I've been in the game for a while. It was the most satisfying night that I've ever had in boxing. It was very emotional. I'm very close with Julian, his trainer, Steven Edwards, his other trainer, Hasim. We've been through a lot. We've been through the highs. We've been through the lows of losing a world title fight. We knew all the things that people were saying, that Julian expressed, that that he wasn't that good, that he was going to get stopped, that he was chinny. And you know what? Julian just put his hard hat on, and ever since the loss to Charlo, he took it like a man, and he went to work, and he's become the fighter and the man that we always knew that he was. I'm going to be 100% honest, guys. What happened in that ring Saturday night was of no surprise to us. It is exactly, and I'm not BSing you guys, exactly how we knew it was going to go. And fight fans are fickle. Media people are fickle. Sometimes it really depends on who they're affiliated with to form their opinion and to see their bias. But nobody was really giving J-Rock a shot. Now, there were people that knew us that were giving him a shot, but that was exactly how we drew up the game plan. Julian followed it to a T, and out of Julian's mouth, before we walked to the ring, he told me, I'm going to bully this guy, I'm going to punish him, and I'm going to be the one pushing him back. And guess what? That's exactly what he did, and you're right. Julian J. Rock Williams is now the unified champion at super welterweight / junior middleweight, and we are very excited about the future.
He was so emotional following that win in that post-fight interview. Like, You know, you could see it even before he got emotional. Like, if you're really watching him as he's giving that, as he's answering those questions from that reporter, you could see it. Like, he's just holding it back, and then he has to let it go. And then he was very emotional, very emotional. And I'm sure when you guys especially, you know, gave him a hug and then got back to the locker room, you guys were just as ecstatic as he was, right?
Well, we were emotional in the ring. Obviously, they weren't focusing on me, but if somebody was going to look at me, there were tears of joy in my eyes. I watched the fight when I got home last night, because as a cut man, and we can talk about this, I'm kind of watching it from a different perspective, especially when a fighter is cut, has swelling, and you're trying to keep him cool and hydrated and all those things. So last night when I got home, my son Andrew, who's a cut man, who worked the two main events on Showbox on Friday night with Michael Dutch over and Ruben Villa, who had successful nights, we watched the fight together, and it was emotional because for both of us, because we're both very close with Julian. I mean, Julian's been a guest at our house. He stayed here while he's trained. So he's like family, and I've been with Julian longer than any fighter that I've worked with on a consistent basis. But it was just gratifying. I was very view of being part of being a cut man and being part of a championship team is always great. I've worked with nearly two dozen world champions, but I gotta say this one was the sweetest one of all. And while I'm saying that, it's really the beginning. It's really the beginning. This is where we thought we should have been when he lost to Jermall Charlo, who is a terrific fighter, and people tend to forget that he's a terrific fighter and he's knocking everybody out. And Julian was doing well in that fight, and he got caught, and it happened. You know, all the great fighters lost. They've all lost. Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvin Hagler, Tommy Hearns, Felix Trinidad, Oscar De La Hoya. I could just go on and on. They've all lost. But you know what they all did? Just like Julian did, they all bounced back. They showed that championship medal, and they got to the top of the mountain just like he did. And like I said, we're very excited.
Mike, how does working in law enforcement, you know, help you prepare for being in the corner, like working under stress, being organized?
Say that again. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
How does working in law enforcement help prepare you for working in the corner? You know, working under stress and things like that?
Yeah, you know, you have a game plan. And if you notice our corner, no offense to the other corner, but if you look at our corner, it's like a well-oiled machine. Everything that we're doing in there is planned. It's an executed plan. It's very directed. We've all done it before. I've worked nearly 160 actual rounds with Julian. So I know every nuance, every breath, everything that he's going to do in the corner, where he's susceptible to swelling, the areas where he's going to get cut. A lot of people didn't even know this, but Julian was cut. He was cut over his left eye since the second round. He has some swelling over the on the left cheekbone that you probably could see, but you know, I did my best to control it, and we've done it before. And I just did what worked, and I applied steady pressure, and the cut wasn't even a factor. By the fourth round, I didn't even have to put medicine on it anymore because I was controlling it with just cold pressure and drying the wound out. And the main thing, because we knew Hurd is a big, strong guy, and he was going to be putting a lot of pressure, and it was going to be a physical fight. We knew it wasn't going to be, you know, Julian, you know, moving around. They assumed because he's a boxer puncher that he's going to be moving around like Tony Harrison, and kind of bouncing off of him and using a lot of energy. That wasn't the case. We were pushing him back and turning him. And it takes a lot of energy to do that. So we had a well-orchestrated plan that we were going to keep his whole body nice and cool and keep him hydrated so that when he got up for that next round, every round, he was going to be ready to go, that his recuperative powers, because he was in great shape, were going to be able to be in full effect.
Mike, do Cubman have to be familiar with the fighters, or are the methods of treatment, you know, the same for every fighter?
You know, I have a certain standard operating practice that myself and I've passed along to my son. And I'm fortunate that, you know, when you talk about the best cutmen in the game, they're all good friends of mine. Rudy Hernandez, Stitch Duran, you know, Mike Basil, Danny Milano, Aaron Navarro. You know, these are guys that are my friends and my peers. And Carlos Vargas, and we've talked, and I've been influenced by, you know, Joe Chavez and legendary cutman Miguel Diaz, and you know, everybody has their own little thing that works for them. But if you notice the great ones, the elite ones, the ones that work at a championship level, they are not going to get rattled because they've been there before. And you can't put a substitute or a price tag on experience, and because you've been through the wars. All fighters react differently. I've worked with some notorious bleeders and swellers. I've worked with Sean Porter. I've worked with friends, El Bandito Francisco Vargas, who also fought Saturday, whose face didn't hold up. I've worked with Sergey Lipinets. I mean, these were guys that have had substantial facial traumas during a fight. And, you know, just stick in there with them and hang in there with them, and you do what's work, and you make sure that you have the best equipment, supplies, and medicine, and you apply your craft to get them to the next round and to get them through the fight. But I can tell you that how a fighter reacts to being cut or swollen is also a huge factor in their success as they continue in the fight.
Out of all those guys that you just mentioned, Mike, you know, you've worked with all these guys, all a bunch of world champions in the sport. Obviously, you know, people's, you know, genetics, some people get cut easier than others. Out of all those guys that you've worked with, who has the seemingly like the hard rock of a face in terms of like they can't ever really be cut, even though you see shots and you're just like, how did you not get cut from that? Is there anything that surprises you?
You say that, and I don't want to jinx anybody. Most of the fighters that I've worked with, and right now, you know, I'm very happy with the stable that I work with, the stable that my son and I, you know, I work with. We work with Joshua Greer, Don't Blink, Mr. ESPN, you know, who night, who brings the pillow in the ring. And, you know, and we're always saying that he's got really tough, thick skin, but I really don't want to jinx him.
Yeah.
because you know, it could happen to anybody. Punches come from weird angles. Your body position comes from weird angles. A lot of cuts and swelling are a result of headbutts. You rub Sean Porter, because he's such an inside fighter and he lunges, he used to catch a lot of shoulders and his head would hit it in different spots. And once you sustain a bad cut, it doesn't really ever heal 100%. If you look at El Bandito Francisco Vargas, because of his pronounced cheekbones, because of his Indian heritage, he's more likely, because of his style and his facial structure, that it's going to cause damage. Sergey Lipinets, your Eastern European fighters, they have a higher brow. And if you come forward, if you think about it, that's what's going to come in contact first. So, but then again, I've had guys that were never cut, and all of a sudden they do get cut. It's just one of those things that if you're going in there with the mentality is, my guy's never been cut, it's going to be an easy night, you may be in for a long night.
Mike, are the rules the same for the equipment, you know, petroleum jelly, adrenaline across all the commissions and governing bodies in the U.S.?
You know, that's fun. It's funny that you say that, because I love working with California Commission, Nevada Commission. They are the gold standard. New York is right there as far as fighter safety. We worked with the Virginia Commission last night, and they were nice enough people, but they don't work a lot of fights. They certainly don't work fights at this level. Their inspectors were very naive and didn't even know a lot of the rules. Thankfully, I had a very open-minded and educated ringside physician that was there. If not, I was going to have to be battling with these guys all night, only because in the absence of their knowledge, they'll just tell you no. So what standard is all the way is you're always going to be able to use, you know, your Vaseline, your petroleum jelly. I use my gauze pads to dry the wounds out, my gauze, different kind of gauze swabs to apply medicine, which pretty standard for the most part is your adrenaline, epinephrine, 1 in 1,000, your thrombin, and your Avitine. I use the adrenaline 1 in 1,000 and the thrombin. It works for me to topically apply it, you know, to a fighter's cut or a bloody nose. And then everybody's got their own version or their different styles of end swells. Some guys like using an ice bag. Some guys like using a bean dip can. You know, I have some custom-made end swells that Trainer and Cutman Rudy Hernandez made for me, and my son and I use those because they just give us the best chance to high grade. It's a high grade metal that we get really cold, and we're able to apply steady direct pressure to swelling. Because of MMA, a lot of people now, it's fashionable to want to be a cut man, and I see a lot of guys out there now that are more concerned with, hey, I'm a cut man, I got a dirty swab in my mouth or my ear, or I got a funny hat or a cute nickname. And I always tell people the best way to get known for being a good cut man is to stop cuts and stop swelling. Always let your work speak for itself.
And you know, jumping off of that, you know, and stopping cuts, what was the worst cut that you ever had to like work on in terms of stopping when you knew, okay, my hands are, you know, I'm going to do my job tonight?
And I had nightmares about it before when Francisco Vargas on HBO fought Orlando Salido at the StubHub.
Yeah.
I literally had nightmares that I went to the ring with no cut medicine and I had to use cake frosting to cover his eyes.
Oh, wow.
He had already had two really bad cuts when he fought Mira to win the title. I wasn't there that night. He used Floyd Mayweather's cut man that night, Rafael Garcia, because he had changed managers. He had been managed by Joel De La Hoya, who I have a great relationship with. And when he left Joel, I opted to not work with him anymore. We reconciled. I worked with him for the Salido fight. But he had two of the deepest, nastiest cuts. I literally used all of my medicine for the 12-round fight of the thrombin and adrenaline to get him through the fight. It ended up being a draw. One of the other bad ones was when Sean Porter, he had two nasty cuts at the same place at the StubHub on Showtime when he lost his IBF welterweight title to Kell Brook. And then some of the other ones was Sergey Lipinets. When Lipinets fought Walter Castillo on ESPN, his cut was so deep in his eye, you could have put a jelly bean in there. That's how deep it was.
Speaking of Francisco El Bandido Vargas, he also fought on Saturday the same night as Julian J. Yes. Rock Williams. I don't know if you were able to catch his fight, but you know he came up short against Miguel Burchell. In another world title fight, it was in Arizona, I believe. Did you get a chance to maybe catch the highlights or anything? You know, what'd you think, especially since you work with him?
And his trainer, Joel Diaz, is a great friend of mine. I just had the feeling Burchell's young, he's snappy, he's physical. The Francisco, better days were behind him. He'd been in a lot of wars, and I had the feeling that his face wasn't going to hold up. And that if you look at his face, that was the case. Joel, being a compassionate man and always doing what's best for his fighter, you know, did the right thing and, you know, stopped it after the sixth round. So hats off to him. And hopefully Francisco, you know, as he transitions to the next phase of his life, you know, has just as equal success, because he's a nice guy. And I just hope they don't start feeding him to these young lions, because having worked with him for a long period of time, with the exception of the last year and a half, you know, he's been through a lot of wars. A lot of people don't remember. He was cut pretty bad in the Abner Cotto fight. He was cut bad in the Will Tomlinson fight. So he's had his fair share of facial traumas. And, you know, sometimes your body can only take so much. And you get a little older, and I think Francisco's on the other side of 30 now, it starts to show.
Mike, for our listeners who are interested in, you know, becoming a cutman, could you just explain to us how you came into the business?
You know, I was a trainer. I was a fighter. I'd been out of the sport for many years, coaching my kids, playing, you know, basketball and football. But boxing was kind of that old girlfriend that you had in high school that you hadn't seen in a long time. And I actually got involved with boxing again about 12 years ago. I had a cousin that was training some MMA fighters in Sacramento, and he asked me to drive up because he had a couple of heavyweights and he wanted to teach them, you know, more boxing technique. And I just told him, you know, I haven't been in the sport in a long time. He says, well, you do me the favor. So I went up there and I kind of caught the bug. I'm back here in Southern Cal, and I kind of reestablished some contacts of people that I used to fight with. You know, many of them were trainers and training guys, and I just kind of got the bug, and I was actually training fighters. But because of my full-time job as a homicide detective, sometimes I had to, like, not be available because I'm working a case. And I had started dabbling in cuts a little bit, but nothing too serious. My primary focus was being a trainer. And then finally I had to make a decision. I was like, because I couldn't be in the gym, you know, with guys every day to run and to spar, because I had a very busy, demanding full-time job. I started focusing on cuts. And I started, the first conversation I ever had was with cutman David Martinez, and he works with Pacquiao now. David's an old Vietnam Army medic. He's worked with Shane Mosley, Oscar De La Hoya. We had a conversation one day on a drive back with some fights, and that's when I caught the bug. And then I sought out the advice of legendary cutman Joe Chavez. Stitch Duran, just ironically, was my boxing coach in the Air Force just before he was ever Stitch. And he's been a great resource for me, as has Miguel Diaz and Carlos Vargas. And, you know, I just kind of took my own spin on things and did kind of things, you know, what worked for me. And I started working some lower level stuff. And I used to have to beg people to let me work cuts because it was kind of a closed, it's kind of a closed profession. If you don't have somebody kind of grandfathering you in, it's a very tough business to get in, because when people see a new cutman on the scene, what are they thinking? That's competition for work. You know, that's competition for work. But I always told myself that I wasn't never going to put any roadblocks. I actually did a seminar Friday night before the fight for some boxing and MMA folks in the Virginia, D.C. area. And I had a cutman that had hit me up on social media that he wants to get in the business. And I had him out there, and we kind of went over a bunch of different things. And it was very rewarding to help people, because there's nothing worse than you wanting to do something in this life and people telling you that you can't do it. And you know what? I'm a firm believer that if you work hard enough, you can do it. But there is no shortcuts. Getting back to your question, too many people now want to put a dirty swab on their ear or their mouth and wear a vest and a funny nickname and a hat and say, hey, I'm a cut man, look at me. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of trial and error. It takes having pride in what you do and not taking those shortcuts. And working at the lower levels and the lower level MMA shows, and working with the boxing guy that nobody wants to work with because he's 2 wins and 10 losses and he's fighting an undefeated 7-0 ex-Olympian. But let me tell you something, those are the guys that bleed, those are the guys that get cut, and that's how you practice. You can't practice doing this, whether it's hand wrapping, working cuts, working the corner. You have to have the actual experience. And I did that with my son for several years, and now he has his own stable. Excuse me, guys, I'm battling a little bit of a cough. His own stable of world-class fighters. And if I'm not available, like on Friday night, I was in D.C. He's already worked with Ruben V and Michael Dutch over 2 very promising undefeated prospects, and he ended up working their fights as well. So it's just a matter of reaching out to people, not being afraid that somebody's going to tell you no, and honestly learning and respecting the craft of being a cut man, which I take a lot of pride in. And there's nothing more gratifying than when you walk out of that ring and your fighter comes out with 3 championship belts. That is what you live for. There are people that do this for 50 years and never have that feeling. You know, I've been blessed that I've been able to do that, you know, dozens of times. And hopefully it's because they respect my work and that I work hard, and that I'm always going to give my fighter the best chance to win.
Mike, when you sign a fighter, do you sign with the trainer and then you get his fighters, or do you sign with the fighter individually?
It's kind of both. Joel De La Hoya, for example, he manages guys. I work with all his fighters, Diego De La Hoya, Edgar Valario. He has a new kid that's making his pro debut. When he had Francisco Vargas, I worked with him. Manager and trainer Danny Zamora, who has Peter Petroff, Ruben Villa, Michael Dutch over, and a couple of other good young undefeated prospects, Ruben Torres. I work with them, or my son works with them. John Coleman, who trains Toke Scott Nanbar, the IBO featherweight champion. Josh Greer, who we mentioned. Nate Gallimore, Terrell Williams, undefeated welterweight. My son and I work with them. And for the most part, I work with a lot of repeat trainers and managers that are comfortable with my work. I just started recently working in the last year with Ariano Sosa in Brooklyn, New York, who has just a fantastic stable of fighters. He was training Big Baby Miller before the failed PED test. He works with ex-world champion Kid Chocolate, who I'm working with, his own son. He's got Chris Colbert, Little B-Hop. He's got a fantastic stable. So it's a lot of people want to work with people they are comfortable with. And then I'll get a call you know, just out of the blue, like when Julio Cesar Chavez fought Canelo. And they say, hey, Mike, we'd like for you to work this fight. Are you interested? Yes. We talk business. We come to an agreement. And then I hadn't, you know, I don't even think Chavez has fought since then, but I did work that fight on a very big stage, you know, with Canelo and with Julio against Canelo. So, you know, you get that kind of work too. And let me tell you something. I'm going to be Thursday night at Fantasy Springs, my son and I, with a kid, Kevin Anton, who's going to make his pro debut. So I'm going from working in a world title fight that was seen by over 1 million people, and now Thursday night I'll make a 2-hour drive to Fantasy Springs to work with a pro debut. You know why? Because you never know who that next guy is going to be.
Exactly. Mike, you're a cut man, an L.A. homicide detective, and also you're turning into a bit of a TV celebrity.
Yeah, what's going on there? You're on NBC now. What's going on? You're a movie star.
Celebrity. Because I have worked some high-profile homicides, on one of my cases, the Sonia Riskin murder, the Lomita Black Widow was a lady that was suspected of having her two husbands killed in the Philippines, 17 years apart, the last husband being killed in 2006, and then her being murdered in April of 2007. And CBS 48 Hours actually did a one-hour special on the case. And all these years later, Dateline NBC is doing a 2-hour special that's going to air in September. And then I've had some other cases featured, you know, as well. I'm looking forward to that. I did the taping of that last week, and that'll be out in September.
Okay, so you're going to have to come to a crossroads here. You're going to either be a television star, a cut man, you know, a homicide detective. I don't know, man. You're juggling it all here. What's going on?
Well, the great thing about it is I have 31 years on the sheriff's department. I got about another year and some change, and I'll be retiring. I'll be opening my own investigative and consulting business. I'm partners with War Tape, who we are pretty much the industry standard in combat sports, you know, for tape. We now got a lot of copycats, so... I got that plus my boxing thing. So there has been some TV opportunities that I've entertained. I just kind of put them off until I retire. I'll go back and explore them later on. But, you know, if you do what you love to do, which I'm blessed to do, then you never really have to work a day in your life. And there's an old saying, people make time for what they want to make time for. And that's 100% true.
You know, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. So you said that your next gig, at least with the fighter, is Thursday, Fantasy Springs pro debut, which, like you mentioned, you're going from a world title fight on Fox seen by millions of people to a pro debut at Fantasy Springs out here in the Coachella Valley in Southern California. Yeah. Which just shows, you know, it just speaks on, you know, the humility that you have, that you're exhibiting. By saying, because, you know, obviously, you know, being in especially in the entertainment or in the sports world, especially the boxing world, there's a lot of personalities out there, you know, the different egos. So, you know, that speaks to,
of course, egos.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So, you know, that speaks a lot to how you operate, going from, you know, the week before then a world championship fight to a pro debut the next week. Right.
Absolutely. And I had this conversation with Boxing Trainer, somebody who's a tremendous friend and a great trainer, Henry Ramirez, who's trained Chris Arreola, Josecito Lopez, and I've worked with Henry with those guys. And, you know, he'll go, we worked, you know, when Chris fought on the Spence Garcia card in front of 50,000 people at Texas Stadium, you know, the next couple of days, you know, he was working with his amateur at an amateur show. You know, it's just the way, it's just the nature of the business, and you can never get too big where you think that I'm too big for this event or this fighter. If a 4-round fighter calls me, and a lot of the times I've worked with the trainer or the manager with other fighters, so obviously I want to start with them. I've been fortunate enough that I've been working with a lot of Frank Espinoza fighters. I'm currently working with Antonio Orozco, who lost his world title fight to Jose Ramirez last year. I worked that fight at Fresno on ESPN. I'm working with Frank and his son's fighter, Joe Gonzalez, who's a fabulous product from Glendora, mm-hmm. who's undefeated. And I've had the opportunity to work with their two young Mexican Olympians trained by Freddie Roach, Joselito Velasquez and Raul Curiel, who I just worked with 2 weeks ago at Fantasy Springs. So that's just kind of the evolution. You're going to work with guys that are at the top of the food chain and other guys that are on their way up the top of the food chain. And you don't want to turn work down. I would never want to offend a manager and tell him or a trainer, well, I don't want to work with this guy because, you know, he's only in a four-round fight and I'm only going to make $50. But you know what? If I expect to be there when he's in a 12-round fight and he's making $500,000, I have to be there then. Because you know why? It's all the things that we talked about with Julian. I know every nuance, every breath that he takes, every bloody nose, every cut, every swelling, every deep breath, because I've been there for 160 actual rounds with him and have worked 25 fights with him over the course of 9 years. And that's where it pays off to have that continuity in the corner. Well, me and the trainers, we work in perfect sync, like a NASCAR, like in the pit when a car makes a pit stop. It's very calculated, it's very coordinated, and it should be very efficient.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Mike, you know what I want to ask too, because I know, especially, you know, large sheriffs or police departments, especially in Southern California, sometimes they have charity boxing events. You know,
yes.
I'm sure the sheriff's department out here in L.A., you guys have run that. Are you usually the go-to guy that they go to for that when they want to organize something like that?
One of my best friends in the world is now the coordinator from the sheriff's boxing team. I kind of stayed away from that. There's a lot of egos involved. And sometimes when somebody comes in to try to help and do the right thing and other people feel like you're coming in on their territory. So I kind of stayed away, but I helped out. I was on the last, back in November, we did the Fight for Life, a big charity event for the City of Hope. It's a boxing match between the sheriffs and LAPD. And they did it over at the Palms Hotel over in the City of Industry. It was a great turnout. I lent my hand in that by giving up my boxing contacts. We had the fighters come out to do a press deal with the wild card with Freddie Roach. Freddie's a great friend of mine. I've known him many, many years. I actually used to train at his gym before there was ever a wild card. There was a gym called the Outlaw Gym that he ran with actor Mickey Rourke, and there was a lot of great fighters in that gym. I used to train there back then. So I just kind of whatever I can do to be a resource to that, I do. But yes, they LAPD and the Sheriff's Department have very proud boxing histories, and they take a lot of pride in that. It's just unfortunate because of my busy job as a homicide detective and my commitments to my pro fighters that, you know, I travel a lot. And one of the prospects that I'm super excited about that you guys have probably seen because he's getting a lot of priority with PBC is Joey Spencer from Linden, Michigan. And I've been fortunate that I was reached out to by him and his father before he turned pro on a recommendation from Virgil Hunter that I've been their cut man, you know, since all of his seven fights. And I'm real excited about Joey because not only is he a fabulous talent, he's a fabulous kid with a fabulous family.
Man, it sounds like you're definitely busy, man. That's why, you know, that's what we appreciate that you gave us the time tonight for this latest episode of our podcast, because we know just based on following your work and everything that you're a busy guy. So
I appreciate you guys reaching out to me and respecting, you know, my work. And I got a lot of big things coming up. I think we're waiting on a fight date for a WB interim light heavyweight champ Marcus Brown, who I'm working with. Like I said, IBO featherweight champ Tuke Scott Nanbar, the Mongolian Olympian, waiting on a date for him. We have Josh Greer and Nate Gallimore. Looks like they're going to fight sometime in July on ESPN. Josh is getting ready for a world title fight. I was fortunate enough to work with Yordanis Ugas when he fought Sean Porter, which is a fight that I thought he won, which was a little weird because I used to work with the Porters. But I had a great time working with his trainer, Ismael Salas, manager Louis DeCubis. And Yordanis is a class act. I thought he did enough to win the title that night, but I know he's going to be in a big fight real soon. So, I'm looking forward to that.
You know what?
The other one.
Go ahead.
Another fighter that I recently worked with, and hopefully we can work together again, was a former super bantamweight champ, Jesse Magdaleno. So he should be having a date coming up soon. So I'm looking forward to having a busy, productive summer and fall to keep the ball rolling.
You know, as a fan, from the fan's perspective, Mike, it just stepping out from your role as a cut man, what fights are you looking forward to in the future or want to see, you know, and that you want to see made regardless of, you know, promotional boundaries?
Oh, man. I would really love to see Errol Spence and Terrence Crawford.
Mm-hmm.
I would really love to see that fight. I would really like to see Mikey Garcia and Lomachenko fight. I would really like to see Anthony Joshua and Deontay Wilder fight. There's a lot of great action at light heavyweight. All those guys, I think, will fight each other. And look at 154 pounds. We now have an era where nobody's got to protect their undefeated record anymore. Yeah. Jermall Charlo was lost. Tony Harrison is lost. Julian is lost. Jared Hurd is lost. These guys are all going to be fighting each other. And it's akin to the days of Oscar De La Hoya, Shane Mosley, Ricardo Mayorga, Vernon Forrest, where they kind of were fighting each other. Tito Trinidad, Fernando Vargas. And you guys remember that? Those were guys that were all fighting each other, you know, and it was great. You remember that Vernon Forrest couldn't beat Mayorga, and Shane Mosley couldn't beat Vernon Forrest, and De La Hoya couldn't beat Shane Mosley. But De La Hoya knocked out Vargas. He knocked out Mayorga. So it's just like a bloody triangle, more than a triangle. And I'm looking forward to that because I think Julian's ready for that challenge. And I think he wants those kind of fights. And obviously, being a little biased, I want to see Julian in those big fights as well, you know, with Tony Harrison and Jermall Charlo and, you know, and those kind of fighters, because, you know, real fighters want to be great. If they're in this sport, obviously, to better their lot in life and make some money, and God bless them, they should, because they work hard and they put their life on the line. But great fighters want to be great, and they want to be challenged. There's nothing better in the world than challenging yourself, and you can see the raw emotion like Julian displayed. That's the raw emotion that you get when you challenge yourself and you test yourself and you dig as deep as you possibly can. That's the reward, and that's the feeling that you get, those raw, organic emotions that really, I think, touched a lot of people and turned Julian into a star.
You're right, man. That's a great analogy, though. I really appreciate that analogy. You used the De La Hoya, the Mayorga, the Vargas, the Vernon Forrest, because you're right. You know, especially that division, the 154 pounds, is totally wide open at the moment. You know, they were talking about beforehand that they wanted Charlo and Hurd at the end of the year, and look what happened. Harrison gets the belt, and now J-Rock has the belt. So everything.
And nobody would have thought a year ago that Julian Williams and Tony Harrison would be both holding those belts.
Nope, you're right. Nope. You're totally right. Yeah. Hey, but it makes for interesting fights.
That's why we love boxing.
That's why we love boxing.
And you know what? And because I work in the business, I got to say, sometimes I'm not as excited about fights as maybe some people are, because I know the ins and outs. I know the business. Let's just say that. And I just sometimes I'm like, I'm not even going to watch. I'm going to watch how the cut men do, and I'm going to watch who wears war tape. And because I already know who's going to win. And people want to see compelling fights, a la Danny Jacobs, Canelo Alvarez. Now, it wasn't the battle that people wanted it to be, but sometimes when you're dealing with two elite, world-class champions, they're not just going to go out there and throw their head up in the air and hope for the best. You know, they're going to be tacticians, and they're going to be very methodical. You know, you want to see the Triple G and Canelo fights, which I thought Triple G won one, and the other one was a draw. You know, and that's the thing. It's, you know, some of these fighters are very powerful. They have a lot of backing on their side, and sometimes all the advantages are going to go to them. But as you can see, Julian went into Hurd's hometown. He was from what I read, a 4-1 to an 8-1 underdog. Jared Hurd was getting a haircut right before he got his hands wrapped. He had a band playing, you know, in his locker room, and everybody was dressed alike, and everybody was having a good old time. But guess what? There were four of us in Julian's locker room. It was me, Steven Edwards, Hassim, and his dad. And it was funny because when we were on our way to the fight, before we got in the shuttle, one of Hurd's entourage made a comment that I didn't think Julian heard because he had his headphones on, but I heard it. He's like, look at Julian. He only showed up with four people. Nobody cares about him. What they didn't realize was we eliminated all the distractions, and we had the people there that we were going to battle with. And you know what? We ruined everybody's plans. And I remember being in the hotel after the fight about 1 a.m. and no disrespect to Jared Hurd, because I think he's a tremendous person. I think he's a tremendous fighter. I have much respect to him and his camp. But there was 100 people in that lobby of that hotel that were expecting a big after party. And guess what? It just didn't happen. And that's just why, because Julian did not cheat the grind. He did not take one shortcut. and he was as determined and focused as I've ever seen any fighter, and especially been a part of any fight, that went in there and did his thing like he did.
I don't think you could have painted a better picture with those words, Mike. That was, you know, that was definitely painting a picture of trying to immerse our listeners in what you were seeing, especially only having four people there, and you know, somebody in his entourage kind of talking smack, you know. But it happens. So, you know, we want to once again thank you for coming on and giving us your time, especially we know as you are a pro cup man, and now you're becoming a TV star, I guess. So, but you know,
I'll be modeling socks here, guys. TV is a young man's game. You know, HD brings out all the flaws and everything. So, you know, but I'm blessed, guys, and I'm more than glad to take any time that I have to always talk to you guys, to educate the listeners, just to talk boxing. You know, it's my passion. I love what I do. My sons are involved in the sport with me. I was with the fight on Saturday. Both my sons, Andrew, and my younger son, Alex, were working the fights out there. We had four fighters, two on TV, two off TV, and I'm watching it on my phone and checking in with them and making sure everything's going good. But I have a saying, what's better than doing what you love with the ones you love most? And anything in life, I don't care what it is, what's better than doing what you love with the ones you love the most? There's nothing better than that.
Right on the money. Right on the money. And then go ahead, Mike, the floor is yours. Go promote what you got. I know you got the fight on Thursday in Fantasy Springs. Promote that. Promote your son, what he's got coming up. Promote your social media. Go for it, man. Throw it out there.
You know, I can be reached on Instagram and Twitter at Boxer Rods, BoxerRodz. I love to chop it up with educated, respectful fight fans. You know, everybody behind a keyboard. I always hate it when somebody calls some fighter a bum or trash. Mm-hmm. It just, I don't care if a fighter's two wins and 15 losses. You know what? I give that guy more credit, because it takes more balls to get in the ring sometimes, knowing that you're probably going to lose. You're going to get the short end of the stick. So I always try to help those guys even out whenever I can, just by maybe talking to them or maybe supplying them with tape or letting them know that they're still respected in this game because they are a fighter. And I don't care what your record is. If you step into that ring, you're still a better fighter than all the people that behind the keyboards are calling people trash or bums. It's just disrespectful, and that's I don't get involved in people's business too much, but when I see something like that happen, maybe it's just my protective nature, I'll call people out on it, because then I'll call them on the carpet, because it's just not right. These fighters, every fighter, whether it's Julian Williams, Floyd Mayweather, Sugar Ray Leonard, or some poor kid trying to get extra money to pay for his kid's education or medical bills, you know, fighting on the weekends after a full-time job, they deserve your respect, and I just wish that more people would see it that way.
You're right. You're right on the money with that too. Well, once again, Mike, you know, we appreciate it, and then please pass along our sincerest congratulations to J-Rock on his big win, and hopefully there's many more to come for you guys and the rest of the team.
Thanks, fellas. Danny and Mike, I really appreciate it, and your engineer for getting everything together. I look forward to coming on with you guys. The timing of this couldn't have been perfect. I would have hated to have to come on, you know, after a loss, because it would have been tough. But you know, this whole last few days, it was the way we drew it up. And sometimes in life, hey, your plans come together. And remember, I had a broken clock once, and even that was right twice a day. So sometimes things just line up for it, and I was glad it did.
Yeah, you're right, man. You got it. But once again, we appreciate it. And like I said, anytime you want to come on, you know, to promote anything or you want to have your son come on in the next couple months, just, you know, just reach out to us, and we're more than happy to accommodate.
And you guys do the same. If there's anything I can do to help you guys out, or reach out to somebody, or you want to have me back on, if you have a question, maybe there's a fight over the weekend where there was a cut that changed the fight, and you want some technical expertise or some commentary on that, count me in, fellas.
Sounds good. We appreciate the time, Mike. Right.
Not a problem, fellas. You guys have a good night. Take care.
Thanks. That was a great interview.
Great.
I'm patting myself on the back right now. You should pat yourself too, Mike.
Just unbelievable insight. Just speaks so well. Just knows.
No, that was good.
Knows the game inside out.
No, yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, you know, as not just a cut man, but also his day job, you know, as a homicide detective. I mean, you know, that's not an easy gig. You know, you have to know how to communicate with people. You mm-hmm. have to know how to speak.
Yeah, you know, he's up on the stand getting grilled, isn't he? You know,
for some of
his big cases. So, like you said, every time he talked about an incident or something that happened in his life, he just painted the picture so well. You could kind of imagine you were there and just easy to understand.
He should be one of those narrators, you know, like people who narrate stuff,
mm-hmm.
like James Earl Jones, like the Mufasa and Lion King or something. Serious, man. I think he's going to be a TV star. He's a pro cut man. He's law enforcement.
Audiobooks.
I think he could do audiobooks.
He'd put me to sleep.
I think hey, man. Hey, Mike, if you're listening to this part, if you take that route, remember where you heard it here first, man. That's a good one. You could put me to sleep. The KO. You're right. But, you know, we appreciate it. Our repeated thanks to Mike Rodriguez, professional cut man, who's just coming off, like he mentioned, probably the most satisfying win that he's ever felt with Julian J. Rock Williams defeating Jarrett Hurd this past Saturday on Fox, who is now the unified 154-pound champion. So, jumping into that fight, obviously, you know, just to kind of, you know, we touched on it quite a bit already, but
mm-hmm.
I mean, we said at the beginning, we both thought Hurd was, Williams was coming in 5-0. You know, he was doing well, 5-0. I think he had 2 KOs. So he was coming off a win streak. So it wasn't like he was outclassed. But I mean, like, you know, Hurd's just like a tank, especially people thinking about his performance against Lara. And look at what happened.
I was at his last two fights, Ishii Smith and Nathaniel Gallimard. He didn't perform, I thought, that well. That's why going into the fight, I thought he had the skills to beat Hurd. But in those previous fights, I always thought that he started well. He started using his game plan. But kind of like Amir Khan, he would get dragged into going down to their level and kind of playing their game, you know, standing with a war like Gallimard on the, I think it was the Hurd Lara undercard. He started well. He was boxing in and out, in and out. Then before you know it, he was just in there, you know, kind of like a slugfest, staying in the pocket too long. It looked like for this one, he'd had a better camp. I believe he came out to California and was sparring with Golovkin, maybe even went up to Canada and was sparring with David Lemieux, I believe. So it looks like, you know, maybe he noticed that himself, that he needed to play his game. And in this fight, he definitely did that. He backed him up like...
Oh, yeah.
Like Mike said, that was the game plan going in.
That was ridiculous, man.
And I don't think Hurd knew what hit him.
Yeah. You're right. I think that's what happened. And Hurd went down for the first time in his career.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's what happened. Like, I think Hurd... I mean, I don't know. Who knows? Obviously, we don't want to... You know, we're speculating here. But I think that, like Mike Rodriguez said, you know, a couple minutes ago, he said, we had a game plan and we went in there and J-Rock executed it. And I think Hurd was just probably caught by surprise. I mean, he got his shots in. He was doing his thing. But, like, I think, you know, did he underestimate him? I don't know.
It sounds like, and obviously Mike said, you know, they had a huge group of people, all the tag-alongs, you know.
A lot of distractions.
Yeah, a lot of distractions. He did a lot of media work beforehand in the local area, you know, trying to promote the fight, trying to sell out the arena.
That was his hometown, too.
Exactly. So it looks like they're going to run it back. There was a rematch clause. It looks like in interviews, Hurd said he's going to do it. But J-Rock said, that's fine, but you're coming to Philly.
Hey, he deserves it.
So
man.
He's going to have to win it in J-Rock's backyard.
I mean, look at Harrison beats Charlo. He gets an immediate rematch. I mean, you know it's going to happen over here. You know, J-Rock beats Hurd. It's going to be, I don't know, maybe September or August or something like that. Who knows? But yeah, that's what's going to happen. Like, you know, there's, you know, the chant there. When you hear the world champion, there's usually a rematch clause in the contract, usually. So,
fight of the year so far? I'll just put this out there. I'll just give you a couple more. Estrada. Don't forget the Estrada
fight.
That's true.
That's the first one that came to my mind.
And don't forget Danny Romanti, Giardini.
Yeah, those are the first ones. The latest DAZN, or not the latest. The DAZN card before Canelo Jacobs. It was that one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right here at the Forum in L.A. I don't know. I think it's a toss-up right now. I mean, like, each one had its moments where you can kind of lean towards one or the other.
Also, Robert Easter, Francis Bartholomew.
That's true.
150 punches over 12 rounds.
No, you're right.
A lot of action.
But I think in terms of, like, you know, I don't know. I probably lean to J-Rock Hurd as of right now. Because in terms of totality, you know, like I said earlier, their PBC was trying to prep, you know, Hurd and Charlo to fight maybe at the end of the year. But then Harrison comes in and spoils it. And now J-Rock comes in and spoils the plan. So who knows, man? But, you know, congratulations to J-Rock. Hurd's going to be back. I think Hurd will be back. Hopefully this doesn't get him mentally, but I think he'll be back.
Yeah, I think he'll be back. We'll see the rerun late towards the late end of the year, especially with it being everyone's talking about a fight of the year. Why not do it again? Why not turn around and do it again?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So hopefully the second one's just as good as the first one. So, you know, moving on. Also on Saturday, like we mentioned, on ESPN, a top-ranked card, Miguel Burchelt defeats Francisco El Bandido Vargas for the and retains his WBC World Super Featherweight title. This was a rematch. So Burchelt beats him twice.
Better than the first time.
Better than the first time. This was more of a statement. But it was, I caught the highlights of it because I did watch J-Rock and Hurd. But I did catch the highlights of Burchelt and Vargas. I like Burchelt. I know people say, like, you know, Lomachenko is just a level above, maybe multiple levels above everybody at that division. But, you know, I think, well, this is 130 pounds, right?
Yeah, but you touched, he did call him out.
But he did call him out.
Exactly.
Right. So, I mean, I like that fight. I like that fight.
I would like to see it. Burchelt's got great work rate. You know, Lomachenko normally does well against people who throw, like, only a few punches, you know, one, two, stuff like that, and then just he kind of dances around them because his defense is so good. But Burchelt, you know, he throws punches in bunches, so that'd be interesting to see. And Burchelt's kind of really cleared out that division.
Yeah, pretty much.
So
yeah.
Unless he's going to start unifying the titles, which he never really seems to have done over the 37 fights he's had, you know, I would definitely like to see that. And Lomachenko is kind of running out of opponents.
Yeah. Lomachenko has made it known, I think in his last fight, that he's like, look, I'll go down to 132. I'll go back down to 130, you know?
Yeah, back
he's
down.
He's pretty much admitted that 135 is his ceiling in terms of weight.
Yeah, either he goes down or Burchelt goes up. Either way, it's a great fight. I'd love to see it.
So. I think it's going to happen. They're both under, you know, the ESPN.
I'm sure it would sell well as well, but Burchelt,
oh, yeah.
Mexican fan base.
They better put it out here in L.A.
I hope so.
Man, I would like that. I would like that. And also on that card, there was two world title fights. Another rematch. Emmanuel Navarrete, you know, beats Isaac Dogbe, or is it Dogbo? I heard it both ways. I still don't know. 12th round TKO. You know, and even then, Dogbe was still, at least from what I was reading, was still coming in kind of as a favorite. Like, people thought, like, he's gonna get redemption. No, man. Like, he did it.
There's just so much wrong in that fight. Dogbe is just too small. His game plan wasn't working. I think it was the 9th round where he took a real beating. You know, his dad should have pulled him out. Sometimes they always say, you know, your dad's always believes that, you know, he's going to do it. Then sometimes he's too safe. I would rather his dad was too safe that night and pulled him out. He was down on the cards. He was taking a bit of a beating. He was starting to get bruised. I don't know whether Dogbe was concussed at the end where he said he was going to move up in weight. But Navarrete was already too big and too strong for him. So he moves up a weight. People are going to be even bigger, stronger.
That's what I thought.
So I'm thinking to myself, I think he may be concussed. So,
who knows, man? I mean, I'm sure now that he's looking back on it, he's like, oh, what did I say? But yeah, I mean, you know, in terms of, you know, two world title fights on ESPN, that was, you know, that's a solid card. You know,
yeah,
that was a very solid card. You know, Navarrete is a player. He's a player now.
I think that kind of cemented that first performance wasn't a fluke.
Now he's a player now. Yeah. He's a player in that division because I think, like you said, there's probably a lot of people thought, like, you know, was that a fluke? Was just Dogbe just having an off night?
Yeah, because everyone was talking about how bad Dogbe's camp was.
Yeah.
I think this time we can actually, you know, give the praise to Navarrete.
Yeah, that wasn't a fluke. He's a player now.
Yeah, definitely.
He's definitely a player and he's got a world title. So, and that was for the WBO World Super Bantamweight title. So, you know, let's just see where he goes from there. And then moving on, fight previews this Saturday from the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, NY on Showtime USA. The Bronze Bomber is back after his split draw with Tyson Fury last December out here at Staples Center in Los Angeles, California. Deontay Wilder puts his WBC World Heavyweight title up against, which seems has been his mandatory challenger for the last 10 years,
mm-hmm.
in Dominic Brazil. What do you think?
I think it's going to be good. You know, we like to compare resumes. So Brazil's only defeat came to Anthony Joshua, TKO round 7, back in June 2016. So straight away, whatever round, I mean, I think Wilder's going to win. So whatever round Wilder takes him out is going to be either better Joshua or worse than Joshua. And that's what people are going to jump on straight away. But listen to this stat I heard, Danny.
Throw it.
So if Wilder wins, that would be his 9th consecutive win as a world heavyweight champion.
Defense.
As a champion?
Yeah.
Yeah, consecutive. And only 10, he'd be only 9 other heavyweights have ever done that.
No way.
So he's going to be
what
in.
What a stat.
He's going to be in a, you know.
What a stat. That's good company to be in.
Exactly. He's going to be in some good company eventually.
That's very good company to be in. But I'm picking Wilder. But, you know, with all these upsets, Harrison, J-Rock, who knows, man? Who knows? I mean, we'll see. But that should be an interesting fight. But, you know, obviously Wilder's a favorite. But you never know. You never know with all these upsets. Let's see what happens. Also on that card, the annual appearance of Gary Russell Jr. is back. He puts up his WBC World Featherweight title against Kiko Martinez. He's back. And what's a year, Gary Russell Jr.?
He fights once.
I like him, man. I like him, but you know, he should be happy. And you know, maybe he is. Like I said, we're speculating that he should be happy that people want to see him more. Like, look, man, like you got speed. You're entertaining. It works.
I just don't know how he fights once a year. So you'd think every time he fought, there'd have to be a mandatory, right?
Yeah.
Or somebody in the top 10, top 15. I have no idea where Kiko Martinez is in the top, in the rankings, but surely he's not that high up.
If he was
second or third in the WBC rankings in the featherweight title, you'd be just scratching your head thinking, if this guy fights once a year, why on earth has he been able to fight against Kiko Martinez?
You're right. Yeah. I mean, who knows? Who knows?
Gary Russell Jr. will blow him out.
Moving on, wrapping up quickly, DAZN also this weekend. Help me pronounce that name again. I can never say his name.
Ivan
Baranchuk, undefeated 19-0, goes up against Josh Taylor, 14-0, for the IBF and WBC silver super lightweight titles. And the winner faces Regis Prograis. Dang, that's a...
My money's on Josh Taylor. I think Ivan Baranchuk is a little bit too one-dimensional. I think Josh Taylor's good.
I think it's a good matchup, but I like Taylor too.
I do. I think it's going to be kind of similar to like the Billy Joe Saunders, David Lemieux fight. I think Josh Taylor's going to try and keep Baranchuk on the move, not let him set his feet. Because Baranchuk's, you know, just kind of like your walking brawler.
Right.
You know, it takes one to land one. And I think Josh Taylor's not going to let him plant his feet, be able to throw. I think he's just going to keep him on the move the whole time. And I think Josh Taylor will win. And I think it'll be a great fight in the final between him and Regis Prograis.
No, you're right. You're right.
When and wherever it's
wherever it happens
to be. Yeah.
Yeah, wherever it happens. Quickly moving on there. Also, another IBF and WBA bantamweight titles are on the line as the Monster Inoue puts up his titles against Emmanuel Rodriguez. I think Inoue is going to finish him within 4 or 5 rounds. That should be pretty quickly.
I think Inoue will win, and obviously he's going on to face Nonito Donaire.
That'd be cool.
And that's going to be a great final.
That's going to be a great fight. That's going to be a great fight. You know, two pretty solid names like that. And then also this weekend from the UK on ESPN Plus, Billy Joe Saunders makes his return for the WBO World Super Middleweight title,
which Ramirez just dropped officially.
Yeah, so we'll see how that turns out. You know, he's moving up from 160 to 168. So let's see how that pans out for him. Also on that card, Joe Joyce, 8-0 heavyweight, goes up against Alexander Ustinov, 34-3. You know, Joe Joyce is still going along in his career. He still has some wins to go, and he does not train with Abel Sanchez anymore, right?
No, he left him, yeah.
Yeah, so who knows? Let's see how it goes now. Let's see how it happens now. And then news and notes quickly. Pacquiao Thurman, July 20th in Las Vegas. That's a great matchup.
Great matchup. Yeah, I'd rather see Pacquiao fight somebody like that over like a, you know, a big, strong, young cat like Errol Spence.
Yeah. So I don't know. We'll talk about that as it gets closer to that fight. I'm sure we'll get somebody on who's connected in some way because that's going to be an interesting fight. Definitely. But, you know, wrapping up here, we do here at the last round, we want to send our condolences to the family of famed unofficial scorer for HBO, Harold Letterman, who just passed away this past weekend of cancer at the age of 79. He's a legend. Unofficial scorer. And also, You know, I know he got most of the attention this weekend, but also we lost heavyweight smoking Burt Cooper, who died from pancreatic cancer at the age of 53 also within the last few days. So, you know, we lost some great people in the sport. So we do want to dedicate this episode of The Last Round, episode 33, to Harold Lederman and smoking Burt Cooper, you know, who gave us a lot of memories in the sport of boxing. But once again, you know, we want to thank professional cut man and LA, Los Angeles Sheriff's Department homicide detective Mike Rodriguez for his time today, for calling in, especially after his win with J-Rock and the team. You know, that was one of my favorite interviews we've ever done. That was fun.
Yeah, definitely. I'd love to have him back on.
Yeah.
Whenever he's available.
So, but once again, I'm Danny Z for Michael Shepard. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.